All right, Rabbi Say, good morning. Let's begin. Today's daf is Lamed Zayin 37, and we are going to pick up on Lamed Vav Amud Beis 36b, three lines up from the bottom. I know you got a little bit further than that yesterday, but just to begin the sugya today together. So Tan Rabbanan, the Gemara says as follows. This is 36b, three lines up from the bottom, Tan Rabbanan. So Tan Rabbanan, Yodcha, Zuz Smol. When the pasuk says that you shall place the tefillin on your hand, this refers to the left hand. So the Gemara says, "Ata Omer Smol Lo Einu Eli Yomin." So how do you know it refers to the left hand? Maybe it refers to the fact that you put on tefillin on your right hand. To which the Gemara says, "Tamud Lomar." So the Gemara will say does a couple of things over here. Gemara quotes a pasuk first from Yeshaya, where the pasuk says, "Af Yadi Yasda Eretz V'Mini Tapcha Shamayim." So the Shparuch was saying, "My hand literally serves as the foundation for the earth, and my right hand holds up the heavens." So what you see over here is as follows. You see that the Yadi, Kadosh Baruch Hu makes two references. He makes a reference to his Yad, and makes a reference ultimately to his right hand. Yadi obviously means the right hand. It's explicitly stated. So if that's the case, then what does Yad refer to? You see from here that Yad refers to the left hand. Therefore, when the Torah says that you put tefillin al yadcha, yadcha must mean the left hand. Va'omer, furthermore again, quotes over here another pasuk from Sefer Shoftim. Actually, amazingly enough, this is by Yael. When she goes out and she kills Sisera, which of course, again, the aftermath of that is Vatayabev im Sisera. The above of Sisera teaches us again what the Tshura of Rosh Hashanah is. Yadali asei tishachena. V'yemina lehelamos amalim. So it's the same idea. You see that an unqualified yada ultimately again refers to the left hand. So from here we see that yad chabay tefillin refers to the fact that we put tefillin on the left hand. Va'omer, lama sashiv, mama sashiv yadcha. So we'll say over here, the Gemara quotes them again from Tilim. Lama sashiv yadcha v'minecha mikerev cheikha kale. So same idea, Bosai. You see that in all of these psukim, the Torah is making two references to hands. But yet, whenever it refers to the right hand, it always uses the lashon of yamin. And yet, for a left hand, it uses the unqualified lashon of yad. So therefore, you see that whenever in Tanakh you find an unqualified yad always refers to the left hand. Therefore, when it comes to tefillin, and the Torah says, Ukshartem li'os al yadcha, ukshart li'os ayitcha al yadchem, yad means left hand. Good. Top of Lam Zayin. Rabbi Yossi Achorim says, I'm also saying, it's interesting, Machlokes, Rashi tells us here as to what this means. What does Chorim mean? So Rashi says, if you look at the top Rashi, Lam Zayin, Amadal of 37a, Chotmo Meshuga. His nose was sunken into his face. Kedarim of the Choros. Chorim says, Chotmo Meshuga. So we'll say, so Chorim refers to someone whose nose is sunken into his face. Like it mamish sounds like some type of deformity. Tosas, on the other hand, says, top of Tosas, on Lam Zayin Amud Aleph, Perush Bekuntros Chotmaya Shakua Kein Chorum Tibichoros, Vetemahu Lomar Sheikh Niu Belashan Gnai. So Tosas says, it doesn't make any sense that they would call Rabbi Yossi by the name of his deformity. Rabbi Yossi Achorim. Oh, Rabbi Yossi, the one with the sunken nose. Why would they refer to him like that? Therefore, it says, it's actually interesting. Remember again, the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva brings down that one of the things that a person does for which there is no chilek l'olam haba is hamechan shem l'chaveiro. If you call someone by a nickname, especially again if it's a disparaging nickname, it's a very serious transgression. So to think that Rabbi Yossi would be called by a disparaging nickname, even though again it's not disparaging as much as it's descriptive, but it's nevertheless disparaging in nature. Therefore, Tosis says that Choram must be the name of his city. That was the name of a place. So Machlokis Rashi Tosis, what Choram means. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yossi Achorim says, Matsinu Yamin Shenikra Yad. But Rabbi Yossi says, here's the problem. In all of the psukim that you brought on Lamed Vav Amud Beis, so the common denominator amongst all of them was what? Was that you see that the word Yad, in an unqualified state, refers to the left hand. Rabbi Yossi says, but we also see the right hand that's referred to as Yad as well. Shene Emar, Vayar Yosef, Ki Yoshis Aviv Yad Yemino. We'll say Yosef sees that Yaakov places his right hand on Menashe instead of Ephraim, to which the Gemara says, V'idach, The other opinion will say, Yad Yemino Ikri Yad, Stama Lo Ikri. So you will say the difference over here by Yosef is that what does the Pasuk say? That Yosef saw that his father placed the Yad Yamin. So ultimately, again, he saw that he places Yad Yamin, on Ephraim. So you see over here that it still doesn't just call the Yamin Yad. Rather, what does it call it? Yad Yamin. So again, at the end of the day, you see this idea that the Torah goes, that in Navi, whenever you want to refer to the right hand, there's always some reference to Yamin, but yet the left is just referred to as Yad. Therefore, leading us to the conclusion that when the Torah tells me that I'm supposed to place tefillin on my Yad, Yad must mean what? The left hand. Rabbi Nosson says, Inu tzarech. The truth is, you don't need all of these drushes. There's a simple reason that we know, there's a simple way that we know that Yad refers to the left hand. How so? Harehu Omer, Ukshartem Uksavtem. Both say the pasuk says, "Ukshartam li'os al yadecha, va'yule totafos b'neinecha, ukisavtam al mizuzos be'secha v'sharecha." There is a juxtaposition between the tying of the tefillin and the writing of the mezuzah. What does the juxtaposition teach us? Mak siva biyamin. I will say, just like writing is done with the right hand, af kshira biyamin, so to the tying of the tefillin has to be done with the right hand. I will say, if the tying is done with the right hand, then what? The chayvan the kshira biyamin. If the tying is being done on the right hand, then what? Hanacha b'smo. So I say, if I'm going to tie my tefillin with my right hand, it means that what? I'm tying it onto my left hand. Rabbi Yossi Achorim will say this follows. Hanocha de bismami nale. We'll say, where does Rabbi Yossi Achorim, where does he learn out that tefillin is put on the left hand? So the Gemara says, Nafkale mehecha de nafkale l'Rabbi Nosson. He will go ahead and learn it out from the same drasha as Rabbi Nosson, namely, the ukshartem uksaftem juxtaposition. So we'll say, so right now, we have two different ways of learning out that tefillin is put on the left hand. Either the first approach, which is yadcha, and whenever we find Yadcha, or at least enough times when we find Yadcha in Tanakh, Yad means what? The left hand. Therefore, when the Torah tells me that I put tefillin on my hand and doesn't qualify it, it means the left. That's possibility one. Possibility two, Rabbi Nosson's possibility, which is the juxtaposition between Ukshartem, Uksavtem, just like writing is done with the right, so too tying of the tefillin is done with the right as well. If I'm tying my tefillin with my right, then what? Where am I placing it? On my left hand. Another possibility. Ravashi Amar Miyadcha. We'll say, listen to this. Ravashi learns this out from another source. What does the Pasuk say? Miyadcha. Now, we'll say, if you'll notice again, the Torah writes Yadcha in a very interesting way. I would have normally thought, how do you write Yadcha, Rabbi Osai? Yud, Chav Sofis. Right? But yet, that's not how the Torah writes Yadcha. How does the Torah write Yadcha? Yud, Dalid, Chav, Hey. So Rabbi Osai, watch this. So Rabbi Ravashi understands this to be a juxtaposition. Miyadcha ksiv behei keha. So Rabbi Osai, he understands yadcha is actually comprised of two words. Yad keha, your weaker hand. Torah is coming to teach me that I place tefillin on my weaker hand. So Rabbi Osai, so again, speaking as a lefty, right? The world was made for right-handed people, right? That is clear, right? So at the end of the day, sayadcha, the weaker hand, what does that refer to? That refers to the left. So we'll say, actually, the beauty of this drasha is, you see, interestingly enough, the first drasha is very much geared towards the right? Because at the end of the day, when it's based on the psukim that are referring to Yad refers to the left. The truth is, the second drasha, which speaks about, again, the juxtaposition between tying of the tefillin and writing of the mezuzah, already leaves the door open for telling me however you write is going to be how you tie. This last drasha, we'll say, is actually a beautifully universal drasha, because what it says is, Yadcha teaches me tefillin goes on my weaker hand. Whichever is my weaker arm is the arm in which the tefillin goes. Amrli Rav Abba Rav Ashi, Ve'ema Yadcha Shebekoach. I don't understand. Why do you say that? Maybe Yadcha means just the opposite. Maybe Yadcha means what? It means actually your stronger arm. In other words, that Yadcha means where should you place the tefillin? Al Yadcha, on your hand that is the stronger arm. How do you know that it means the weaker arm? Amrlei miksiv b'ches. See, Rabbi say again, had it said Yadcha, right? Yud ches sofit or chav sofis, then what?
then I would have understood, I could have had that habamina that maybe Adcha means your arm, the arm, i.e. the stronger arm. The fact that it says it's Yud, the fact that it writes as Yud Dalit Chaf Hey, it's a strange writing. Therefore, again, Abba say, must mean that what? That it's a contraction of two words, Yad Keha, your weaker arm. To which the Gemara says, you're right. In all of this, Yad Kitanai, in reality, this entire thing is a machlokes tanai. Yad Cha Behe, Zusmo. So we'll say one of these sides of the opinion says, Yad Cha Behe, Yad Keha, means that what? It goes on your left hand. Where do you understand that it goes on your left hand? Because Yad Cha is a contraction of two words, your weaker hand, which teaches me that tefillin is put on the left hand. Achirim Omrim is actually very interesting. Yad Cha, no, there's a different Rasha. What is Yad Cha teaching about say? L'rabos es hagidim. We'll say it's actually quite interesting. What does this come to include? A gidim. We'll say a gidim, look at Rashi, l'rabos es hagidim, she'en lo yad. It comes to include even what Rabbi say, an amputee. That even if someone doesn't have an arm, he still goes ahead and puts his tefillin on the weaker arm. Which Rabbi say, so what does this mean? Now, what this, we're going to discuss this sugya more. What this is really referring to is someone who's like an amputee below the elbow. So what do you do with tefillin if you're an amputee below the elbow? You still put your tefillin on your left hand, assuming that the person has a right. You put it on your left hand. But I said it's actually a very important halach and hilchos tefillin. Even if someone's not an amputee, you know this comes up all of the time. Someone has a cast. What do you do with tefillin if you have a cast? So I say, so the halacha is, as long as you have the ability to put the bias on the bicep, you're good to go. Even if the ritzuas have to go over a cast, it's fine. The ikar is the placement of the bayis on the left hand for a right-handed person. So as I said, the idea over here is different drushas for yadcha. One opinion uses yadcha to teach me yad keha, I put tefillin on the weaker hand. The other opinion uses yadcha to teach me what? To teach me that halacha lemaisa, I place tefillin even on an amputated hand. In other words, that even if a person is amputated from the elbow and below, and all they have is the bicep, they still put the tefillin ultimately again on that arm. Tanya idach, ein lo zroa, pater min ha-tefillin. A person doesn't have an arm, he's pater from tefillin. I will say, it's actually a very interesting halacha. This is the mamish a person, mamish doesn't have an arm. Nebach, the whole arm is amputated. So what do you do in that case? A person is pater from tefillin in that case, Rabbi Osei. Which again, remember, there's a practical issue here. What's the practical issue, Rabbi Osei? You can't put it on. Remember again, what's interesting to note about this approach is, when it comes to the tefillin, the Torah clearly says, ukshartem, which means, in order to be chayiv, I have to have the ability to put it on. If I only have one arm, I don't have the ability to put it on, and therefore, at least according to this opinion, we're going to get into this sugya more. A person will be pater from tefillin. Achirim omrim yadcha. The rabbi says hagidim. Others say yadcha comes to include what? Comes to include the amputee. So we'll say. So what's interesting about this as follows: leaving aside the amputee case, because we'll discuss that in greater depth later on, actually in a few blocks from now. But what we come out with is pretty much everyone is on the same page. That's where you're putting tefillin. You're putting tefillin on your left hand. Now again, where we're going now, how we get there is subject to a machlokes. We essentially have three different limudim, three different approaches for understanding how tefillin gets on your left hand. Now the Gemara introduces about say the other side of this coin. What about an eater? What about a lefty? Right? What does a left-handed person do about tefillin? So turn around on eater. Maniach tefillin biyamino, shu smolo. A left-handed person puts his tefillin on his right arm, because that is his left. In other words, Rabbi Osei, what you clearly see from this drasha is at the end of the day, which limud do we accept? We accept yadcha, yad keha. We accept the drasha ultimately again, that what does the Torah write it? Yud dalit chaf hei. Teach that tefillin goes on the weaker hand, the yad keha, which is beautiful because now that becomes a universal limud. So for the right-handed person, that tells him you put tefillin on your left hand. For the left-handed person, it tells him ultimately that what? That he goes ahead and he puts tefillin on his right hand. So v'hatanya maniach bismolo shu smolo shal kala. Then Rabbi will say, but one second. We have another braisa that says that even a left-handed person should put his tefillin on his left hand. Amar Abaye, ki tanya hahi v'sholet b'shtei yadav. Rabbi, listen to this. So Abaye says, what is this talking about? A person is ambidextrous. Right? So a person who uses both of his hands, ultimately, again, will be treated like a righty. Will be treated like a right-handed person and should put his tefillin on his left hand. Ultimately, again, but I will say someone who does not use both of his hands, someone who's left-handed, ultimately, again, will put his tefillin on his right hand. So I'll just tell you a very quick, Maisa Shaya Kachaya. There is an interesting discussion in Halacha about what happens if a person writes with his left hand, but does many other things ultimately with his right hand. I happen to find myself in this particular situation, as I write with my left hand, but do many other things with my right hand. So there's a big machlokes aposkim as to where you put tefillin on. So when I became bar mitzvah, so the psak that I received is you put on tefillin like a lefty. When I was learning there at Yisrael, I had a Rebbe who said, you know, you really should ask a Shaila about it. I said, thanks. Okay, fine. So I said, I'm not going to tell my father that you told me that I have to ask a Shaila, but okay, I'll ask a Shaila. So that Shabbos, I happened to find myself in Shari Chesed, and Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was still alive. The Magid of Yerushalayim, Rosh Hashanah, was still alive. So I was davening in the Grashul that Shabbos. And the way they used to have, I don't know how they have it now, but there was like a break between Kabbalah Shabbos, or Minchan Kabbalah Shabbos, or Kabbalah Shabbos and Ma'ariv. I don't remember which one. And it was a time, and Rav Shlomo Zalman and the Magid accepted Shilas during that time. So I went over to Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, and asked him what I should do about my tefillin. So as I say, he said, I can't paskin for you. I'm not the Rav of the Shul. The Magid was the official Rav of the Grush Shul. So as you understand, so forget about the answer, right? I'll tell you what the answer was in just a moment. But what was amazing is Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach was the Gadol Hador. He was one of the last people who was like the undisputed Gadol Hador. There was Rav Moshe, there was Shlomo Zalman. It's hard to find who's the undisputed Gadol Hador in it. Because whatever, unfortunately, we're a little bit more fractured. The Gadol Hador said that he couldn't pass in a Shaila because he wasn't the Rav of the Shul. I would say, such humility and such anivus, and such as I have to be, the Magid was his brother-in-law, which was, and they sat, they both sat on two sides of the Aron Kodesh. The Magid was his brother-in-law. He would not pass, so he sent me over to the Magid. So I went over to the Magid. So the Magid said, why don't you ask Rav Shlomo Zalman? I said, all right, listen to me. I'm going to ask the two of you to please work this out. But if someone, so the Magid passed, and he said, no, you go Basar Ksiva, you go after writing. That's that locha that's brought down in the Mishnah Berurah. That ultimately, again, your identity in terms of left-handed or right-handed person is at the end of the day determined by how you write. So if you write with your left hand, then ultimately, again, you are treated as a left-handed person, and halacha lemaisi, you pronounce feeling like a lefty. So just an incredible maisa shahaya kachaya. Tana debe minasha. So as the Gemara goes weiter. So tana debe minasha, ayatcha zuki boras. So we'll say, here's what's interesting. The Shaila, of course, is the Torah tells me I'm supposed to place tefillin on my hand. Yadcha means your hand. You know, we translate it often as arm because ultimately, again, because we know where tefillin goes. But really, yadcha means your hand. So the Gemara darshins, ayadcha zuki boris. That refers to the bicep. It refers to the bicep. You put tefillin on your bicep. Beinei necha, zukad kad. We'll say, beinei necha, tefillin between your eyes, you put it on the kad. What's kad? Heicha. So Amar Dibei Rabbi Yanai, Makom Shemocha Shaltinok Rofes. It is the place where the skull of a baby is soft. So the sausat, I don't know the scientific... Fontanelle. Beautiful. Good. Fontanelle. So the soft spot. I refer to the place where I used to have hair. So I longingly rub it. So that's the kad. So we'll say, so the fontanelle, the soft spot of a baby. So the Gemara says, boy mine plima mi rabbi. Mishi yesh lo shnei rashim, be'eza mehen maniach tefillin. So we'll say, listen to this Gemara. This is an amazing Gemara. Someone who has two heads, where should he put on tefillin? Which head do you put on tefillin, Rabbi Hussein? So Rabbi Hussein, listen to this. This exchange is amazing. So this is plimo acid from Rebbe. Rebbe got very angry. Amarle, he says to Raphim, his Talmud, he says to, sorry, so he says to Plimo, his Talmud, O kam gale, O kiba alecha shamta. Essentially, either get out of here, right? Either get up and go into exile, or leave the base of Medrash, or accept upon yourself some kind of excommunication. Rebbe was very upset at the Shaila because he felt that Plimo was making fun of him. Look at Rashi. Rashi says over here, O kam gale, O amud vitseba galus, either get up and get out of the base medrash, O kibel alacha shamta, da'achuchi chayachasbi, you're making fun of me. In other words, Rebbe said, why are you wasting my time with the Shaila that you know is impossible? It's impossible, right? Ultimately, again, someone's not going to have two heads. So listen to this, Rabbi Osai. Adahachi, as literally Rebbe's getting upset at Plimo, Asu Gavra, a man comes in and he says, Amalei, Isyad li yinuka de isli trei rashi. I just had a child who never had two heads. Baby was born with two heads. Kama ba'inan lemesav lekoin. And I have to, it's a firstborn. I have to do pinyon aben. How much money do I have to give the Kohen? In other words, Rabbi Osai, essentially what the father was asking is, do we redeem it as one child or do we redeem it as two? So the Gemara says, Asu Saba Tanile. So there was another older man in the base medrash who Tarshint, he said, Chayiv Liten Yud Sloim. Ultimately, again, you're Chayiv to go ahead and give two and ten Sloim. Rabbi Osai, remember, the amount for Pinyon Aben is how much? Five Sloim. So what this old man was asking, whoever this old man was, so you have to realize, whenever you sometimes see Asu Saba, that a mysterious old man appears from nowhere, so sometimes, again, it refers to Eliyahu HaNavi. I don't know if it's Eliyahu HaNavi in this context or not. So again, but in other words, this old man appears and he says, you have to give 10 Sloim. Eternally Chayvat L'Itein Yud Sloim. Is that true? So Bosei, by the way, the appearance of this man, now understand, Bosei, the appearance of this interesting petitioner who Nebuch has baby with two heads, there was one thing is clear. A child, even if Nebuch's child is born with two heads, the child's not going to live. It's not talking about Siamese twins, right, with two bodies and two conjoined heads. This is talking about one body, two heads. So such a child, even if it's is not going to live. But I will say, the confluence of events over here is, Rebbe got very upset because he thought Plimo was making fun. He thought Plimo was asking a ridiculous question just for the sake of mocking Rebbe. This man shows up and says, such a metzias exists. Now, is a child like this ultimately, again, going to live to the age of Bar Mitzvah, Kippur on Tefillin? No. But nevertheless, it was redeeming Plimo's question. Plimo's question was not done in a mocking fashion. The Metzias exists. So Plimo was asking Rebbe, the Metzias exists, what do we do under such circumstance? Baharaya, the father Nebuch walks in and says, listen, this is the situation. My child was born with two heads. What do I do ultimately again? What do I do ultimately again about Pidyon HaBen? To which the old man responds, 10 Sloim. Essentially, you redeem this one child as two children. So the Gemara says, Ini, is that so? So we'll say, because the Pasuk says, Pado Tifta Es Bechara Adam, so Shomea Ani, Afilu Nitraf Besoch Lamed. I would have thought that what? That there's an obligation to even go ahead and redeem a child, Nebuch, who died within 30 days. Talmud Lomar, therefore the Pasuk says what? The Pasuk says, Amud Beis, Ach, Chilek. So the Pasuk says, to which the Pasuk says, Ach. So Rabbi Osai, Ach normally comes to distinguish. What does Ach come to distinguish, Rabbi Osai? Between a child who is able to live for 30 days and a child who doesn't live for 30 days. You're only obligated to do Pinyon Aben for a child who's capable of living 30 days. But presumably this child who was born with two heads cannot live for 30 days, and therefore there is no din of Pinyon. Shiny Hacha, it's different over here. Why? The Bigulgoles Talarachmana. But it's actually very interesting. When it comes to Pidyon Aben, the Torah actually uses the Lashon of Chamesh Shkalim LeGilgoles. Gilgoles means what? Per head, per skull. Right? So interestingly enough, the way the Torah phrases the obligation of Pidyon is 5 shekel per head. So the Gemara's understanding over here, or at least this old man understood, the fact that the Torah phrases the obligation of pidyon as per head tells you if the child is born with 2 heads, there's an obligation for 5 shekelim per head. But I will say, but the idea over here, the Gemara just brings this up as a redemption for Plimo. Right? Plimo was not making fun. Plimo was not joking. Plimo was not trying to disparage his Rebbe. Plimo Mamish asked the question, and again, Vaharaya, it comes up. Again, I will say, you know, many times in Gemara, we ask questions where the Metzius is virtually impossible for it to happen. But nevertheless, it can. And therefore, again, we have to ask. Well, so just as an aside, you know, there are plenty of people who walk around with 2 heads, right? Plenty of people, right? There's a tar head, there's a tameh head, there's a kaddish head, there's a not-so-kaddish head. And I will say, what Rebbe is saying is, you can't have 2 heads in life. It's kind of like the same way that you only have 1 mouth. So you have to really be careful what you use that mouth for. So you only have 1 head in this world as well. Be very careful what you fill it with. It'd be a beautiful luxury to have 2 heads. Can you imagine that? I could have a Kaddish head and I have a Chol head, right? It would be fantastic. I could fill up 1 head with Dvarim Shebekdusha and the other head with all the other Narishkeit that I want. But the last, the Ribon Shel Olam only gave me 1 head. Only gave me 1 head. Be careful what you fill it with. Amar Mar. So we'll say, Lam Zayin Amad Beis, 37b, second line down. Amar Mar, Yadcha Zuki Baras. So we'll say, we said before, Yadcha means your bicep. Now, where do we know that from? Minalan, the Tan Rabbanan, Al Yadcha Zugova Shebiyad. Al Yadcha, we'll say, means the height of the arm. Now, what's the height of the arm? So we'll say, the Gemara understands it to be the muscle, the bicep. So the Gemara says, "Ato Omer Zugova Shabiyad, O Eino Ela Ayadcha Mamish." How do you know that? Maybe Ayadcha Rabbo say literally means that where should I put my tefillin? Maybe I should literally put it on the palm of my hand, right? That's after all. What does Ayadcha mean? On the palm of my hand. Amr Torah, Hanach Tefillin Biyad, VaHanach Tefillin Berosh. So we'll say, you know, the Torah tells you I'm supposed to put tefillin on my arm and tefillin on my head. Malalon Begova Shabarosh. Just like the tefillin Rabbo says, put where? On the height of my head. Afkan begova shebiyad. So too it's put on the height of the arm. What's the height of the arm? Rabbo says, the Gemara understands it to mean the bicep. So Rabbi Eliezer Omer inu tzarech. Rabbo says, you don't even need this whole drasha. Why not? Harehu Omer v'haya l'cha li'os. L'cha l'os v'lo l'achirim l'os. Rabbo says, actually a very interesting halacha. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech olam shakol niyeh b'dvaro. Amen. So the Gemara stands over here, tefillin, referring to the tefillin shel yad, is v'haya l'chalos. It shall be a sign for you. Which Rabbo said, the Gemara stands to mean over here, l'chalos v'lo l'acherim los. It's supposed to be a sign for you and not a sign for others. The tefillin shel yad are supposed to be a private sign for you and not a sign for others. Now, if you look at Rashi, Rashi says, we will say, in the second short line, second of the shorter lines on top. Listen to this. Your tefillin shel yad is supposed to be a sign for you and not a sign for others. Which means that the tefillin shel yad is supposed to be placed in a place where what? Where you could keep it private for you and others don't see it. Now, if you go ahead and you place it on the palm of your hand, then what? Then what? Everyone could see it. But if you place it on your bicep, what can you do? Cover it. See, Rabbi say, this, by the way, yields a very important concept, which is the idea of dafka covering the tefillin shel yad, of pulling down your shirt sleeve over the... Again, it's not li'ikuva. In other words, the idea is, and I'm not going to say it's a halacha that you have to cover it, but when possible to cover it, there is the concept ultimately of pulling your shirt down over your tefillin shel yad for exactly this idea. It's a sign for you, the tefillin shel yad. You keep it covered that no one else could see it. Rabbi Yitzchak Omer, Eino Tzarech. Rabbi Yitzchak says, I don't even need that whole drasha. I'll tell you, it's even simpler. Hariyu Omer, V'samtem samtem estevarai ela. Right, we'll say the pasuk says V'samtem estevarai ela al vavchem v'al nafshechem, and then it goes ukshartem osam liosaitchem. So listen to this. So the pasuk says V'samtem estevarai ela al vavchem ukshartem shetei sima kineged halev. So we'll say ultimately again, the juxtaposition is v'samtem es devarai eila alivavchem v'al nafshechem ukshartem osam. There's a juxtaposition between what? The tying of the arm tefillin to my heart. What does that teach me? That the shalyad has to be opposite my heart. Shete sima kineged halev. Ultimately, again, the placement of the shalyad should be opposite my heart. What does that tell me? It has to be on a place on my arm that is opposite my heart. What's the place in my arm that's opposite my heart? The bicep. Which I will say, now this drasha, interestingly enough, poses a problem for who? For the lefties, right? So this does pose a problem, but not really, because remember again, we're taking all of these drushas together. I have the Yadcha drasha, Yad Keah, which teaches me that tefillin goes on my weaker arm, but the idea is that it's placed on the arm, the juxtaposition between Visamtem and Levavchem teaches me that it's placed in a place which is opposite my heart. So even if I'm a lefty and I'm placing it in my right hand, I place it in a place where my heart... See, the difference just is lefties have more heart. You see, right-handed people only have heart on the left side. Right, lefties have it mamish on both sides. Good. So the Gemara says, So let's listen to this. So therefore, the Gemara tells, would make sure to place their tefillin shalyat opposite their heart. So they place it on the left hand, on the bicep. Most of all, it teaches me something else, which is that the bias of the shalyat has to be slanted inward. We'll see this more explicitly later on, but the halacha is that when you have your arm by your side, the bias should not be pointing straight out. Ultimately, again, the bias has to be nestled up against my heart facing it. Rabbi says, it's a very important halacha that many people make a mistake with. It's much easier, you see, if you put on your tefillin, like Nusach Sfard, it's much easier, right? Because ultimately, again, remember, by Sfard putting away a tefillin on, you're winding away. So by definition, again, you're keeping your bias. If you're winding Ashkenaz, where you're coming out like this, very often just because of the way you're tightening the tefillin, the bias is pulled away. So a person has to be very careful to make sure that when their arm is down, the tefillin should be pointing inward towards the heart. So the Gemara talks about this. So these rabbis would make sure that when putting on their tefillin, the tefillin was facing in towards their heart. Ravashi Hava Yosef Kamei Amir. So listen to this. Ravashi was sitting in front of Ameimar. Havatsairi biyadei. They come as chazian tefillin. So what happens? His sleeve tore. There was a tear in his sleeve. And as a result, the shalyad was visible. Amar leilo savar leimar l'chol li'os v'lo l'achirim los. So he said to him, doesn't Rebbe hold that the tefillin shalyad could only be for you a sign and not for anyone else a sign? In other words, everyone else could see your shalyad. Amar leilo b'makom l'cha l'os itmar. The idea was that what the drasha means is you should place your tefillin in a spot on your arm in which it could be only for you an os, as opposed to a place where everyone else could see it. Where could everyone else see it, Rabosai? If I understand yadcha literally as the palm of my hand. But I place it in a place where ultimately, again, it could be just for me, which is on my bicep. So I'll say, again, that's what you see. What do you see from this story? Ideally, my tefillin shalyat should be covered. That is the ideal. It should be covered. What does it mean? I always have to wear long sleeve shirts? No. Okay, so a person wearing a short sleeve shirt, you can't cover it. But when possible, the idea is that the tefillin shalyad should be covered in order to mekayim the full meaning of hayal l'chalios, that the os should be for you and not the os for anyone else. Beautiful. Go v'shem rosh minol. And I will say, from where do I know that the tefillin shalrosh is put on the highest place on the head? So the Gemara says, the Tanra Rabbanan bein einecha. The pasuk says, you shall place the tefillin between your eyes. Zuguva gova shebarosh. This refers to the highest place on the head. Ato omer zuguva shebarosh o eina ela bein einecha mamish. Now, say, now how do you know that? Remember again, what does bein einecha mean? Bein einecha means what? Between your eyes. From where do you know that bein einecha means the highest place on my head? Maybe bein einecha means exactly as it's stated, namely between the eyes. To which we are supposed to listen to this. Ato omer gova shebarosh o eina ela bein einecha mamish. Ne'emar kan bein einecha. Listen to this. So it says over here, Beinecha, between your eyes. Menemar lahalon, lo sasimu karcha bein einechem lameis. So listen to this. The pasuk also says, you shall not create a bald spot between your eyes. I both say, now this is talking about the prohibition to what? To pull out hair as a sign of mourning for the dead. Now it uses the same lashon of bein einechem. So on one hand it says bein einecha batilin. On the other hand it says by the prohibition of pulling out hair as a sign of mourning, lo sasimu karcha bein einechem lameis. We'll say, just like over there, when the prohibition is to pull out hair in mourning, we'll say, what is that referring to? It's referring to a place where there's hair, right? There's no hair being in the even if a person has an eyebrow, that's not what the Torah is referring to over here. So my mom is pulling out hair. So just like it's talking about what? The hair on my head, by karcha, so to what? So ma lahalon begova shebarosh. So we'll say, here's what's interesting as well. The custom, apparently, again, bless you, for going ahead and pulling out hair in mourning was in a place where it was exceptionally visible. So where do you often pull out hair in mourning? Mamish, on the top of the head. So to mar lahalan begavo shebarosh, makom shose karcha, afkan begavo shalosh, makom shose karcha. We'll say, just like, again, by the prohibition of karcha, which refers to the top of the head, so to by tefillin, we learn that where is the place in the rosai ben einecha? On the top of the head as well. Rabbi Yehuda says, well, that's drasha number one. Rabbi Yehuda says, Eino tzarech. I'll give you another drasha. This is a different drasha. Amra Torah, Hanach tefillin biyad, Hanach tefillin barosh. Rabbi Yehuda says like this. Torah tells me I'm supposed to put tefillin on my arm and tefillin on my head. Mal halan b'makom harari ditame b'nege echad. We'll say, just like ultimately again, over there by the tefillin shal yad, it's placed on a part of the body that is only susceptible to one type of tzara'as tuma, afkan b'makom haro'i litamei b'nega echad. So Rabbi said the tefillin shel rosh is also placed on a part of the body that is only susceptible to one type of tuma tzara'as. La'afuki b'nei necha, this comes to exclude the area between my eyes, where what? Di'ika basar v'se'ar. Rabbi said there is both flesh and hair, which Rabbi say again, the area between the eyes could become subject to multiple different types of tumas saras, namely, if there is a white hair or if there is a golden hair with some type of skin discoloration. So also listen to this. This is such an interesting limud. The comparison between the arm tefillin and head tefillin tells me that just like arm tefillin is put on a part of the body, namely the bicep, that is only susceptible to one type of tzara'as, so too the head tefillin could also be put, has to be put on a place of the body that is only susceptible to one type of tzara'as. So the top of the head where there's hair is really, Rashi points this out, it's only susceptible to one type of tzara'as, as opposed to the area between the eyes, bein einecha, which ultimately is subject to multiple forms of tzara'as. Okay, so the Gemara just has different types of limudim, but bottom line is the same, which is ultimately the tefillin shalosh shall be put on the gova shalosh, on the top of the head. Different drushas to get me to that conclusion. Tefillin shal yad will be placed on the highest part of the arm, i.e. the kibores, the bicep. Tefillin shal yad ultimately again is yadcha, is vayal la'osa yadcha, it's a sign for you. Therefore, when possible, to keep it covered. But again, if a person can't cover it, ultimately, again, one still fulfills the mitzvah. Beautiful. So the Gemara goes weiter. We'll say now we transition to tzitzis. We're actually going to come back to tefillin the next perek, interestingly enough. We come now to tzitzis. Remember, again, we had a fundamental machlokes in the Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Yishmael in the Mishnah about tzitzis. Namely, are the four tzitzis one mitzvah or four independent mitzvahs? So the Tanna Kamma, the Rabbanon held, Arba tzitzios ma'akvos zu azu, sha'arba asan mitzvah achos. So both say the rabbis held that all four tzitzis are in fact what? One mitzvah. They're all one mitzvah. And because they're all one mitzvah, if you're missing one of them, then what? It compromises your ability ultimately to fulfill the others. So if you don't have one, then you have nothing. Rabbi Shmuel, on the other hand, holds that no, each one of the tzitzis is its own independent mitzvah. So let's say, Rabbi say, again, the nafkamina we're going to see, I only have enough strings for three corners, what do I do? According to the Rabbi, and Rabbi say, nothing, and don't wear the garment, because you can't wear it. According to Rabbi Shmuel, you still get the mitzvah for putting tzitzis on three corners. So says the Gemara, my benai, what's my other brother's team name? I'm Rabbi Yosef. Sudden betzitzis ika benai. Boss, listen to this case. So Rabbi Yosef says, Afkamino boss, it will be in the case of what's sudden. Boss is actually a fascinating case. Imagine for a moment you have a sheet that is made out of linen, and you have tzitzis that are made out of wool. Now, Rabbi Yosef, the halacha is, you are allowed to wear tzitzis that are shatnas. Right? That's meaning you are allowed to go ahead and put woolen tzitzis on a linen beged. You are allowed to. I was about to say, in fact, some say that is the best way to fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis. We know this because of the juxtaposition ultimately between the prohibition of shatnas and tzitzis. To teach me that what? The prohibition of shatnas does not apply to tzitzis. Let's have the following case. I therefore have my linen beged, but I only have tzitzis for three corners. So according to the Rabban Rabosai, he's not allowed to wear the baguette. Why not? Because it's shatnas. Because the only time the shatnas prohibition is lifted is when? When you have tzitzis on all four corners. According to Rabbi Shmuel, ever again, no. Even with the presence of three corners of tzitzis, you're still fulfilling the mitzvah of tzitzis, and therefore again, you could even wear the woolen tzitzis on three corners with the linen garment. So Rava Barahina Amar Talis Balas Chamishi, Rav will say, this is actually an interesting discussion. Again, we're going to spend more time on Daf Mem Gimel, Rashi points out. What about if you have a garment made out of five corners? Right? Five corners. Rashi says over here, Balas Chamish, Shechatach Mikarna Echen. I will say, how do you get a garment of five corners? Very simple. You cut one corner into two. Suddenly now you have five corners. So we'll say, so now watch this. So we're going to learn later on, Batanala come on, I'm reading Rashi, Batreles, Talis Balos Chamesh Chayeves Betzitzis, V'yolef Meribuye Dasher Techasev, L'tanakamadar Mitzvah Achos, Hein Savar Arba Dafka L'mitzvah, V'achos, V'chi Rabbi Rachmana Balos Chamesh Lahatil Arba Kanfo Serabio, V'lahatil Knaf Chamishi, U'mitzvah Sitzis B'dalek Knafos, U'Rabbi Yishmol Darma Ba'arba Asa Mitzvahs, Kerav Nachman is supposed to listen to this. So the second afkamina will be, what if you have a garment that's five corners? According to Rabbi Shmuel, if it's five corners on both sides, we'll see this later on. This Rashi points out, this is a sugya on Daf Mem Gimel. It's really interesting. According to Rabbi Shmuel, if you have five corners, then what? You have an obligation for five tzitzis. Meaning one tzitzis per corner. According to the Rabbanon, maximum number of tzitzis that are chayiv on any one garment is what, Rabbi Shmuel? Four corners. Next. Ravina Amar Drafuna Big Ikemenaya. Ravina says no, the nafkamina Rabose Betinu will be the statement of Ravuna. What does Ravuna say? Dem Ravuna, listen to this. Hayotse Betala Chinamitsiyatas Kilchasa Bishabis Chayiv Chata. So let's listen to this. If you go out with an improperly tzitzis, I'm using that as a verb right now, tzitzis garment, you are chayiv e chatos. We'll say this one a situation where what? Where you've gone ahead and you don't have an Eruv in this situation, and you're wearing a garment that does not have proper tzitzis on it. So the halacha is, I will say, because it doesn't have proper tzitzis, therefore what? You'll be chayiv echatos. Look at Rashi. Rashi says over here, so what's the case over here? Now remember again, if you just stand wearing a garment is no chayiv hotzah. What's the case? Rabbi saying, I'm wearing a four-cornered garment with what? Three tzitzis. Three of the corners are tzitzis, one is not. According to the Rabban and Rabosai, what's the halacha? I'm chayv chatos. Why? Because I've carried the tzitzis. Three corners is the equivalent of nothing. And therefore, again, I am actively carrying the tzitzis on Shabbos. According to Rabbi Yishmael, what's the halacha? Three corners of tzitzis is still three mitzvos, and therefore, again, I am not carrying on Shabbos. Rav Shishi Rav Idi. So listen to this. I'm Rav Shishi Rav Idi. Hayman de batzri liglime lo avid velo klim. Shavie. So listen to this. We'll say. So if a person goes ahead, look at Rashi. De batzri liglime shechatach echad min akranos chaticha kagom panima dinirin kishne kranos. So listen to this. If a person cuts one of the corners into two. So Rav Shishi Rav Idi says he's done nothing. Shavye talis balas chamish. Ultimately, again, he's made it into a five-corner garment. I will say, the Gemara is working under the assumption that a five-cornered garment will still be chayiv in tzitzis. What's the only machlokas, I will say? What's the only machlokas? How many of the corners are chayiv in tzitzis? It sounds like over here that according to the Rabbanon, four out of the five will be chayiv in tzitzis. according to Rabbi Shmuel, all five will be chayiv in tzitzis. But nevertheless, the garment itself is still chayiv in tzitzis. We'll say first wide line, lam zayin amadeis. Amar Mesharshia, haiman ditzari aligalime, lo abad velo klum. We'll say next case. One who goes ahead in what? Tzari aligalime. We'll say in this case over here, what I've done is, I've tied a corner. Look at Rashi. Haiman ditzari aligalime, shahaisa taliso aruka. The talis was very long. V'kafla v'tala hatzitzis bikranos. And I will say, what do? I go ahead and I tie the corners of the garment. So I will say, so what I've done is, I've tied the garment in such a way that the corners are no longer visible. And I'm so proud of myself, because what have I done, in my opinion? I have hereby rendered the talis, bless you, I've hereby rendered it a non-four-corner garment, so I've parted it from tzitzis. To which the Gemara says, you haven't done anything. My taima, the command of Shaitan, I will say, the act of tying it, see, I will say, we'll discuss about making certain irreversible changes in a baguette. But tying it to a bosai does not make an irreversible change in the baguette. In other words, we view the baguette as if it's untied, and therefore chayv in tzitzis. The command is shayidim, in other words, it's as if it's untied. Another example of this, utna nami, kol chamosos hatsuros tohoros, chutz mishal arabi. I will say similarly again, if you have, Rashi says, chamosos are nodos hatsuros. I will say, this is talking about if you have, let's say, a leather item. And what do you do? You tie it on the bottom in order to make it into a receptacle. And I will say now, in order for an object, a kli, to be makamal tuma, it has to have a receptacle. So what am I doing in this case? I'm taking a piece of leather, I'm tying it at the bottom, I made it into a receptacle. As such, now it's makamal tuma. To which the Gemara says, no, it's not. Why? Because the act of tying something, Rabbi Osai, is not enough of a permanence in the kli. Because something that's tied can just as easily be what? Be untied. And therefore, in halacha, we view it as if it's untied, it's not a receptacle, and therefore it's not in the kabbal tumah. With the exception, the Gemara says, is chutz mishel aravim. So apparently, again, these type of aravim kalim, the way they were done is they were only knotted. They were never sewn together. So because that's their derech, ultimately they'll become tumah like that. They will be mekabel tumah like that. So we'll say, so again, the idea being, is very important, the idea being, knotting something does not fundamentally change its identity. So for example, knotting the corners of a baguette together does not go ahead and change its identity from having corners. Rather, just because it's knotted now, halachically we view it as if it's unknotted, untied, and therefore be subject to the obligation of tzitzis. So we'll say, by the way, you think to yourself, why would someone do this? There's a very simple reason. I have a four-cornered garment, and I love this four-cornered garment, and I really want to wear it, right? I want to wear it. There's only one problem, which is it doesn't have tzitzis. So I have a great chap. What am I going to do? I'll tie the corners together. I'll knot the corners together. Ta-da! Suddenly it's a non-four corner. It's only two corners now. To which the Gemara says, nice try. But again, because knotting is this incredible impermanence, therefore we view it as it's unknotted. It is a four-cornered garment, and you may not wear it without tzitzis. Another example. Haiman dechaite aliglimi. I will say, this case is even more intense. What's this case? I will say, chaite, I've sewn it together. Let's say Rabbi say I sew some of the corners up. I just take one corner, and I sew it up into the garment. Rabbi say, now this is even bigger. Beforehand, okay, knotting is one thing. Sewing is something different. Lo aver velo klum. Rabbi say, the Gemara still says that halacha lamaisa, even though the corner is sewn back, so that it doesn't have a corner anymore, we still view the corner as if it's in existence. Why? Because the Gemara says, "Im ase delomi bailei lifsak v'lishajei." Because it was the same way you stitched it, the same way what? You could unstitch it. It's easily unstitchable. You could cut the stitches, go ahead and restore the corner, and therefore halachically we view the corner as if it's in existence. So essentially, the only way, if you wanted to go ahead and patter this garment, would be to what? If you cut the corner off. Einachinami, again, you no longer have a four-cornered garment. But anything short of that, in other words, the act of going ahead and knotting the corner, the act of tying the corner, the act of sewing the corner, does not take away the corner identity, and therefore one would still be chayvitz. So let's just finish the parak. We're almost there. A few more moments. I'm Rabbi Huda. So now the Gemara quotes from Bishmol. Bishmol says that what? That halacha lemaisa, all four tzitzis are four independent mitzvos. Oh, Ramos, again, remember the nafkamina being according to Rabbi Shmuel, if you have a four-corner garment and you only have three tzitzis, you put on the ones that you have and you get three mitzvos. I'm Rabbi Yehuda, I'm Shmuel, halacha k'Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Yehuda saying the name of Shmuel, the halacha is k'Rabbi Shmuel. The Gemara says, v'les hocha say kavasai. No, it's not. No, it's not. We'll say, and indeed, that's how we pass. We pass like the Rabbanon, that all four corners are considered to be one mitzvah. And therefore, again, I will say, if you don't put tzitzis, there is no difference between a tzitzit, between a garment that has tzitzis on three corners and a garment that's what? Has tzitzis on no corners. It's four or nothing, right? We'll say in general in life, go big or go home, right? It's four corners or nothing. Four corners or nothing. We'll say, listen to this incredible case. With this, we're going to end. Ravina, because it goes to the end of the parak. Ravina havaka azil abasre demar baravashi. Shav shad rigla. We'll say, listen to this. It's a great story. Ravina was walking behind mar baravashi b'shabbos rigla. We'll say, Shabbos rigla means the Shabbos of the Yom Tiv. In other words, we'll say, that was a time. Well, it's almost finished. Okay, you have to go. Okay, fine. So Shabbos the Rigla. The Shabbos the Rigla. So listen to this. So Ravina is walking behind Mar Bar Avashi. Shabbos the Rigla. The Shabbos of Yom Tov. But say, the reason why Shabbos of Yom Tov is because, remember, Yom Tov, especially, again, they used to have large shiurim. So the Talmud was by the Rebbe. So Mar Bar Avashi. So Ravina is walking behind Mar Bar Avashi. If sak karna duchute. Listen to this. So Mar Bar Avashi. So Ravina sees Mar Bar Avashi's tzitzis get caught on something, and either we'll say something happened, either the whole corner ripped off or the whole tzitzis ripped off. But the point over here is that effectively Mar Bar Avashi was now wearing a four corner apostle garment. In other words, we'll say that he really wasn't allowed to continue wearing this garment. Now watch this. Velo amar lo velo midi. But interestingly enough, Ravina did not say anything to Mar Bar Avashi until Mar Bar Avashi got home. Kadmati lebeise, amar le mehasim ifsik. When Mar Bar Avashi got into the house, Ravina said to him, Rebbe, I just want to let you know that, you know, when we were back in that place before, the tzitzis ripped off one of your garments, one of your corners, and you really should take off the garment. Amar le, I amrit le mehasim shadise. So Rabbi says, listen to this. Mar Bar Avashi said to Ravina, had you told me this in the place, ultimately, again, where it actually ripped, I would have taken off the garment right then and there. Now, I will say that this is not just the pshat that this was like, you know, this was a primary garment of his. So what he was literally saying was, had you told me it ripped in the place that it ripped, I would have gone and taken off that piece of clothing, even if what? It would have been embarrassing for me. But we learned. The Rabbi say, kavod abrios, respect for the individual is so important, that it's doche alo sa'aseh shabbatorah, that it's doche even biblical prohibitions. Now, we'll say, now, presumably, what is that referring to? It must be referring to this kind of case, where someone tells me that I am wearing a garment that really requires tzitzis, and for some reason I don't have the requisite tzitzis. So what we seem to be saying is, kavod abrios is so great that what? That it's even doche alo sa'aseh. What's the lo sa'aseh, Rabbi Osai? The lo sa'aseh is wearing a four-cornered garment without tzitzis, that I'm not obligated to compromise my personal dignity, even though, again, I'll be in violation of wearing an untzitzis garment, to which the Gemara says, no, that's not what it refers to. Tirgima Rav Bar Shiva Kamei Rav Kahana, Tap of Lamin Ches, Belav Dilo Sasser. Bosai refers ultimately, again, to a Dirabbanan. What it's saying over here is as follows. That Rabbi say, when there is a conflict between kavod abrios, my personal dignity, and rabbinic law, my personal dignity trumps rabbinic law. Right? So I don't have so many errors. I don't have to go ahead and compromise my personal dignity for rabbinic law. But ultimately for a daraisa, I would be obligated to compromise my personal dignity. So therefore, Rabbi Osai, if halacha lemaisa, so now you have Mar Bar Avashi saying, Ravina, had you told me, even when we were sitting in Rosh Sarabim, that I was wearing a four-cornered garment without tzitzis, I would have been obligated to take it off right then and there, even though it would have been embarrassing for me. The only time my personal dignity trumps halacha is when it comes to rabbinic law. The Rabbah said there's an alternate version of this story. V'ikadamri hasam, amarle, excuse me, v'ikadamri, they'll say there's an alternate version. Now in this version, listen to what happens. So same story, same people. Ravina's walking behind Mar Bar Avashi. He sees Mar Bar Avashi's corner tear off, or the tzitzitar from one of the corners. He tells Mar Baravashi right then and there. So we'll say Ikeda Amri Mihasim Amalei. He tells him right then and there. But Amalei. So we'll say in this version of the story, Mar Baravashi tells Ravina, but Amalei, my daitech l'mishtiye. So what do you think? By you telling me this, that I have to take off the garment? I don't have to take off the garment. After all, Vahamar Mar, Gadol Kavod Abriyo Shadochas Lo Saseh Shabbatora. Ultimately, I don't have to take off the garment, and I'll tell you why. Because we learned that what? Kavod Abriyo's personal dignity is so important that it sets aside even a prohibition, a biblical prohibition in the Torah. Aye, but one second, but Rabbi, that's not true. Bar Tirgama Mar Baravashi, Kamei Duraf Kahana, Belabdalo Sasser. That's only true in terms of rabbinic law. But I will say, but the act ultimately again of wearing a four-cornered garment without proper tzitzis is a biblical prohibition. So your personal dignity doesn't set aside a biblical prohibition. Ah, but it does. Hachinami Karmelis Tirabananhu. Rabosai, where was Mar Bar Avashi when this whole episode happened? Rabosai, he was in a Karmelis. What is a Karmelis? We'll say a Karmelis is an area that is not a biblical Rosh Hasharabim, but Midraban and the rabbis made it like Rosh Hashanah, you can't carry there. So in other words, Rabosai, what's the issue of wearing ultimately again? What's the issue of wearing a four-cornered garment that doesn't have proper tzitzis, Rabosai? It's an issue of carrying. That's the issur d'oraisa we're talking about over here. There's an issur d'oraisa also to wear a non-four-cornered garment. Rabosai, but the primary prohibition that they're focused on over here is the one of hotzah, is the one of carrying on Shabbos. Right? Carrying on Shabbos, ultimately, again, that's why, by the way, the case is Shabbos derigla. It's not on Yom Tov. Because if it was on Yom Tov, there wouldn't be a problem. This is Shabbos derigla. This is on the Shabbos of the Yom Tov, Rabosai. There's an issue of hotzah. To which Mar Bar Avashi says, no, I still don't have to take it off over here. Why? Because where are we? We're in a Karmelis. We're in an area where there is an Isser Hotzah Midrabanan. Because the act of taking off this garment would ultimately compromise my personal dignity, so I don't have to do that when all that is at stake is rabbinic law. If it was biblical law, then Enochinami, I would have to take it off right here, right now. But because ultimately, again, there is an issue primarily of rabbinic law, ultimately, again, I could wear it till I get home, take it off there, thereby preserve my dignity. Hajun Allah, HaKomet, we'll say Mazel Tov, we'll be able to Hashem, we'll give a new prayer tomorrow.